Okay, welcome everyone. We are lucky tonight to have a very interesting topic that I believe will generate quite a bit of discussion. And this the presentation tonight is based on research that was done as part of a National Bank of Greece research call. And we have two speakers of the three who are actually part of the research project. Kyriakou Nanou is a lecturer at University of Nottingham and has a PhD in politics from University of Essex. And she has had a number of different fellowships, including here at the LSE, right, in European politics. And Daphne Hanikinopoulou is associate professor in comparative politics at the University of Reading and has written quite a lot on nationalism and various forms of extremism, and is, for instance, the author of a book called Patterns of Secularization, Church, State, and Nation in Greece and the Republic of Ireland. And their third co-author, who could not be here tonight, Sofia Vassilopoulou, is a senior lecturer in politics at the University of York, and I just wanted to mention her because we don't want to exclude her. So this evening, Kyriaki and Daphne will be presenting on changing the policy agenda, the impact of the Golden Dawn on Greek party politics. And we have maybe 40 minutes. Is that okay?
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. I'll start, and Kyriaki will pick up at some point. I am going to stand, if that's okay, because I've got fidgety and I like to move around. So I'm just going to stand here, and I understand there's no clicker, so I'll just click away.
There's no clicker.
Lovely. So thank you very much for inviting us, and thank you for your introductions. We also wanted to very quickly give you a very sort of short overview of the project that this work is based on. So as Rebecca kindly said, this project is a result of a National Bank of Greece funding that we received, the three of us, Sofia, Kyriaki, and myself. The title is Radicalizing the Mainstream, and what we wanted to do in this research is essentially try to understand what impact the entry of the Golden Dawn in the Greek party system have had on other parties. I want to thank Dimitris Survanos and Nicoleta Kiapidou, who were our research assistants, and the coding has been done by them. So Dimitris is here. I can't see Nicoleta. No, she's not here. But so, yeah, so we need to mention you, and we will talk a little bit more about exactly how we did the coding later when Kyriaki will talk to you about the data. But just to give you a sort of a brief introduction of the rationale of what we're doing, I've presented this I don't know how many times, again and again, on presentations on Greece, on presentations on the far right in Europe. I've presented this: the resilience of the Golden Dawn. The Golden Dawn in many ways is a puzzle. It's an aberration if we see it comparatively to what is happening in the rest of Europe, because it is one of the only, I would say, properly neo-Nazi parties that is actually in a parliament in a European country. Most of the parties that are successful, the populist or the far-right parties that are successful in Europe at the moment, are what we call the populist or the radical right. Those that are distancing themselves from fascism, those that are putting forward a sort of a civic understanding of nationalism and national identity, those that are putting the justification of all their policies in saying that we don't exclude people because of their race or their origins, we exclude people because of their ideological their ideas basically are contradictory to our liberal democratic ideas. So the Golden Dawn not only is elected and is in parliament, but it's also very resilient. And we see this here from 1994, marginalized, 1996, 2009, slightly better, but it marks its electoral breakthrough in 2012 and has been enjoying electoral support until now. So it's got seats in the parliament. It's also undergoing trial for various charges. So it's a very different kind of far-right party. And there is a lot of work and a lot of research on this. Why has the Golden Dawn risen? We've written a lot about it, but also other people have written a lot about it. There is research that focuses on the voter profile. What kinds of people vote for this party? What would be the structural causes, the effect of the economic crisis, possibly now the effect of also the migration crisis, demand-side explanation, political opportunity structures, explanations, etc. But the three of us were sitting there thinking, okay, so there is one aspect of this, one dimension of this, which is why this party has increased its electoral support. But there is another dimension, and that is what are the consequences of its entry into the system? A lot of my presentations and work, a lot of people have said to me, well, you know what, so we get 7% of the vote, so what? So what? Is this successful? How do you know a successful party from a non-successful party? If you get 7% or 6%, does that mean it's successful? So we thought, okay, there is a way to scope to find out if this has an impact. So what we really need to do is look at the impact of the entry the party has had on the policies and on the salience of issues of other parties in the system. So what we want to present to you today is our paper, our Greece paper, which focuses on the impact of the Golden Dawn on the dynamics of party competition in Greece, and more specifically in this paper we look at issue salience. So we look at the extent to which a particular topic is talked about a lot, to what extent it is mentioned more by other actors in the political system. So very briefly about just the justification of why we call the Golden Dawn the far right. So we call them far right as opposed to populist right or populist radical right, because we see it as a broad umbrella term that consists of parties that compete along the national identity axis. So what all these parties have in common is that they justify all their policies on the basis of nationalism. So what Sophia and I call this is they put forward nationalist solutions to a variety of social problems. So say they have a particular welfare policy, they justify it on nationalism. We should exclude foreigners who shouldn't access the collective goods of the state. Or if they have an immigration policy, they justify that on nationalism. They justify all their positions on nationalism. But since the far right is an umbrella term, there are variants within it. What I talked a little bit about in the beginning. So there is the extreme variant, those parties that are have links with fascism, both in terms of their ideology and also in terms of their members. Parties that reject democracy as a whole, and parties that tend to perhaps espouse violence, parties that have grassroots bases, etc. And on the other hand, you have the radical right parties, those that are not anti-systemic, those that are trying to distance themselves from fascism, those that try to put forward the civic justifications of nationalism and national identity, those that appear more legitimate in the eyes of the voters in an attempt to attract people. So, and this is, for example, the Dutch Freedom Party, even the Front National these days, the True Finns, a variety of mainly Western European far-right parties that have distanced themselves from fascism. Our focus on this paper is really on the extreme variant of the far right, which is where we place the Golden Dawn, not only in terms of because they tend to have a picture of Hitler in their home or something like that, not because of that, but because their ideological and organizational structures actually resemble those of fascism. So they are not only nationalist, but they are statist, they embrace the fascist ideas of cleansing, paramilitarism, and eradication of internal and external enemies. So we classify them as extreme, and more specifically fascist and neo-Nazi. And we can discuss this, if you like, at the Q&A. So what does this mean? A neo-Nazi party has entered our, I'm assuming a lot of people, a lot of you are Greek, has entered our parliament and legislates on our behalf, represents us in parliament. What are the consequences of this? This is why we wanted to look at party competition. Party competition, what we call political opportunity structures, matters. It matters a lot for legislation. It matters a lot for the particular position that party take. So there is a broad literature behind that, but that basically expects that the entry of a far-right party in the system will affect the other parties. The entry of a far-right party in the system will affect other parties in two ways. The one is what we call the so-called contagion effect. So it will affect the actual policies of another party. We know this very much with, say, immigration. We can see it now in the UK with Brexit. UKIP sort of drove party competition in a way, right? And now everybody, even the Labour Party, is espousing stricter immigration policies. So the policy position of a party is expected to be affected. But secondly, the issue salience is also expected to be affected. In other words, the extent to which a particular topic is discussed, the extent to which it is mentioned. Issue salience doesn't mean that a particular party will necessarily... Sorry, it's so distracting. Hi.
Sorry.
Come
hi.
On.
Oh, okay.
So issue salience doesn't necessarily mean that if a particular topic is salient, it doesn't mean that the parties are actually adopting similar positions to the far-right party, but it does mean that the issue is being discussed a lot. And this is important for two reasons. First, because it might change the nature of the debate by having an issue discussed more and more. And secondly, it shifts the emphasis away from other important topics. So issue salience is something that political scientists study quite a lot, to try and understand how particular issues become important for the agendas of various different parties from left to right in a political system. Now, from this very broad theoretical perspective, we have derived in our paper four hypotheses, and I know you see three there, but I will explain why this is the case. So our first hypothesis is with regards to immigration, our second is with regards to nationalism, and our third and fourth are with regards to what type of nationalism, the ethnic variant and the civic variant. So we have two separate hypotheses for the type of nationalism, and I will explain this in a second, but before I do this, just briefly, our research questions are in this paper. What has been the effect of the Golden Dawn on party competition, with a particular focus on issue salience? Has its entry into the system influenced the agendas of other parties, and if so, how? What has been affected? Which brings me to our first issue, immigration. So the most salient issue for far-right parties is immigration. This is the basic justification of their policies. This is what they care very much about. They have what we call issue ownership. So they are parties that put forward strict policies on immigration. Most of them support the exclusion of foreigners or somehow stricter immigration policies, not letting the natives, if you like, have access, not letting immigrants have access to the collective goods, to welfare, to jobs, and to other social, the provision of various social services. There's a lot of literature that says that, therefore, the entry of far-right parties into the system is likely to influence the focus of other parties on immigration, because they try to compete along this axis. Again, I'll bring the Brexit example as well. Now, the idea is, oh, okay, people are voting on the basis of immigration. Immigration is the most salient issue. There's a lot of surveys, even questionnaires. I think, you know, what is the most Eurobarometer? What is your most salient issue? Immigration. So parties are going to change their policies, try and emphasize immigration. And the far-right parties that have ownership are in a good position. They're in a privileged position because they can compete on this. So from this, our first hypothesis is that if this is true, we should therefore expect that the rise of the Golden Dawn is likely to be associated with an increase in the salience of the immigration issue across the system in Greece. We should see immigration being more salient. This makes a lot of sense. This is probably the simplest. However, we noted, as scholars of nationalism, we've noted something else as well, that issue ownership is a bit of a tricky thing. So yes, they have ownership on immigration, but in fact, far-right parties are not really single-issue parties. They actually have policies on a variety of areas. They put forward a policies in a variety of areas. And what distinguishes them from other parties is that they put forward these nationalist solutions to all these policy areas. So far-right parties also have issue ownership, if you like, of nationalism, right? They put a nationalism justification in everything they support. Okay, it cuts across the different policies. So, for example, a particular issue may be salient, but they put a nationalist justification. Nationalism cuts across all the other issues. They put a nationalist justification to economy. They put a nationalist justification to welfare. They place a nationalist justification to immigration. All of these issues. Therefore, we expect that the entry of a far-right party in the system will not be confined to the immigration issue, but rather the rise of a far-right party, and in our case, the Golden Dawn, is likely to be associated with an increase in the salience of nationalism as a whole across the party system. But to nuance this a bit more, nationalism is another umbrella term, which is rather complex, but for the purposes of this talk and this paper, we divide it into two broad categories, ethnic and civic. There are different ways in which a party or an actor can be nationalistic. Okay, on the one hand, you have ethnic nationalism, which essentially means placing or defining the nation as a group that consists of people of the same race, of common descent, joined by their blood, their common origins, creed, etc. Things that are immutable, difficult to change, things that we're all born with. This is ethnic nationalism. But then on the other hand, there is also the less static kind. There is the more inclusive, the more voluntaristic criteria of national membership. What joins us could be institutions. What joins us together could be the particular political culture that we all belong to. Civic justifications. Now this, we argue, has an impact on different political parties adopt different types of nationalism. In our other paper, The Paradox of Nationalism, we've actually shown how ethnic nationalism is a far-right thing, whereas civic nationalism is actually a far-left thing. So nationalism is not confined to the far-right. From this, we therefore develop another two hypotheses. Hypothesis three, the proportion of references to ethnic and cultural nationalism will then likely be part of the right-wing parties in the system, but the proportion of references to what we call the civic nationalism, to our territorial and economic justifications of nationalism, is likely to increase among left-wing parties. Okay, so with this in mind, we had this theoretical framework, and now we wanted to test it. So what did we do? We wanted to look at the way to test it is to examine how parties express themselves, how they formally express their programmatic agendas. And they do so, in our opinion, in this paper, in two ways. First, in manifestos, in their manifestos, where they put forward their policies. And secondly, in speeches that they do, for example, in formal speeches that they carry out in the national parliament. So in order to capture the change, so looking at variation across time, both pre-crisis and after the eruption of the crisis, we looked at the manifestos of Greek parties in five national elections, 2004, 7, 9, 2012, and 2015. In total, we examined the manifestos of 10 parties. I'll show you in a second which ones. And a total of 30, Dimitris and Nicoleta did the coding for these, and 33 manifestos. Secondly, we also wanted to look at the particular speeches of what we call critical junctures, at important times when we needed to know how the party, where the party stands, as a snapshot of their behavior, a snapshot of party behavior. So we looked at what we call four critical legislative junctures, the three memorandums of understanding, 2010, 2012, 2015, and during the July 2015 referendum. Okay, and then our rationale here was to compare two critical junctures, memorandum 1 and 2, during which the Golden Dawn was not in the legislature, and two critical junctures during which it was, the memorandum 3 and the referendum. And just before I give this to Kiriaki, this is a table. I mean, you can ask us. This is just for your information to understand what we have done to make it a bit clearer. These are the parties that we've looked at, the manifestos, and these are the years that their manifestos were examined. This is all available. And these are the speeches. We've also noted here the particular party leader that made them in the particular years that were covered. And now Kiriaki will take on from me and explain to you exactly what we found and how we did it.
So in our approach, actually, we were trying to do a systematic coding of those manifestos and see in which policy areas the political parties are placing most emphasis. And we came across the Comparative Agendas Project, which is quite a well-established project that actually started from some colleagues from the United States, where they were looking actually trying to match the different agendas, the electoral agenda, which comes from party manifestos, but also the parliamentary agenda, the governmental agenda, and so on. So they were trying to see how issue priorities travel from, let's say, the pre-electoral, during the electoral elections, the promises parties make. Do they change the priorities once they're in government? Do they change the priorities once they're in parliament? Or when they're in government or in opposition, do they ask questions relating to the most important issues for them and so on? So we use this methodology. In our case, the emphasis is on during the electoral period to see whether Golden Dawn has different priorities as a far-right party. So we find actually what we know from the literature, a lot of emphasis on immigration, a lot of emphasis on defense, on law and order and so on, compared to other political parties in the system, let's say Syriza or New Democracy and so on. So whether we find, first of all, we have these differences in the agendas, but also whether by the entry of Golden Dawn we find that actually following that the other parties also start engaging with those issues, the far-right issues. So we use the Comparative Agendas Project, although it runs in different countries, so there are different country teams that work on this project. It's not centrally funded, as, for example, the Comparative Manifestos Project, the University of Essex, which started there originally. But actually, each country team has its own research questions, and it just uses this methodology to research those. But they have produced a master codebook, which we actually use to produce the Greek codebook, which we use for this paper, but also we hope most people who are interested in studying either legislative behavior or elections in Greece, we hope to expand it more. And code more agendas, laws, and so on, that you guys will make use of all this data we've already collected and what we hope to add to it. So the beauty of the project is, of this methodology, is that we won't only make publicly available just the aggregate data, so the proportions of, let's say, the percentage of mentions that Golden Dawn made on terms of immigration or the economy and so on, but actually you could see the raw data, so the actual speeches or the actual manifestos, and next to each policy sentence you'll see in which category, how we coded it, and so on. So you could look very detailed because there are 19 major topics, so let's say economy or environment, if you're interested in that, or I know there's a paper on gender studies in another, looking at it from other country data. So you could look at not only the broader 19 major topic categories, but also the subtopics if you're interested to see, let's say, oh, what does Golden Dawn say about the environment, right? It's easy to go to our data and see, dig more deeply and see which sentences we've coded with regards to the environment and how much emphasis they put on that. The idea here about the project is how we coded it is we break down the sentences. The sentences have a policy mention, so the party talks a lot about the economy or reducing budget deficits and so on. And then each sentence we match it to one policy that's the predominant policy. If in the same sentence they mention two policies because they're mutually exclusive, we assign it only once to the dominant policy. We had two coders, Dimitris and
Nicoleta.
Sorry, I was with Dimitris and Dimitris and Nicoleta. And we had several meetings where we were looking through the coding scheme together, but also they each other coded a sample of documents, so we calculated some reliability scores there. I believe this is potentially this could generate more studies in this area because, as I said, we really put a lot of effort in collecting the data. We want more people to make use of them after, obviously, we publish a bit on that. And we know from other CAP country teams that they have actually they could match the data with other databases. So you could match them with priorities of citizens in terms of what's the most important issue. So then see whether parties, do they emphasize the most important issue perhaps of the partisans or of the median voters, from the average voter. You could match it with in between, as I said before, the agenda. So if you we could code government speeches, you could see what's the most important issue for the government, or what are the laws that were produced in this term in government in comparison to the original priorities of parties and so on. And as I said before, you could even if you do qualitative work, you could go into our database and see the original sentences and save you a lot of time actually searching through all the documents in this particular area you're interested in. So as Daphne said, for this project we're interested to see how the policy agenda has changed over time, but also how particular issues emphasized certain aspects of the agenda. So just here in the paper we have for all the elections we've coded, and actually we had already started 2000, we haven't managed to finish yet. But here I just wanted to show you the three most important issues across the parties we have coded. And what you see kind of is obvious that in 2012 and 2015, although we expected immigration to be probably the most important issue, from what we know from the theory on the far right, immigration to be the most important issue for the Golden Dawn and Laos perhaps. But what we find that actually this is not the case. Why this is not the case is because we know that we had the period of crisis, which was all-compassing in Greece, and the main focus was the economy, and it couldn't be anything else. And what we know from other actually studies, especially in Southern Europe, so from the Spanish Comparative Agendas Project, they've published a paper that says that in periods of bad economic when we have bad economic conditions, high unemployment, we have or inflation is high, or we have this problem with public debt. But also, they looked also more closely on the economic crisis. They did find that the agenda gets very, very much restricted. So we have less diversity on the number of issues that are salient for the parties. So even in the case of Golden Dawn, what we found actually is that Golden Dawn has engaged in those salient issues for the average Greek voter, and of course that they were highlighted by the other parties. So although we expected perhaps law and order immigration will go high, but actually they talked a lot about the government. There was a lot of talk about corruption. If you remember, right after the 2009 election, there was a lot of talk about what happened to the money in Greece and all the rest of it, and all this blame attribution discussion that's captured by this category, government operations of government, which we name in our code book. And you find also, of course, the economy dominated. So the Golden Dawn actually seems to appear to behave very, very similar as the other parties, right? So, because microeconomics are important, the government, and here in 2015, also defense, of course, you would expect. That's, again, an issue that far right owns. So just if we look more closely in the Golden Dawn manifesto from 2012 to 2015, just how the emphasis changed across the different policy areas. Unfortunately, the key is a bit small. The font, you can't see very well the categories. But if I were to just point down here, that's the economy, how much the salience has increased from about 11% to almost about 17% in terms of the economy. And then you see also the same with regards to how much they talk about the government, the other parties, how the government party is not doing enough, and of course about political corruption. This has reduced because obviously the idea in the Comparative Agendas Project is that political parties have limits to how much they can talk about how much attention they can draw to topics. So if one increases, obviously the other one is likely to go down. So the economy was number one. So our first hypothesis, as Daphne explained, was whether the entry of Golden Dawn would show us that all the other parties are also going to increase the attention to minority rights and immigration, our broader category. And disappointingly, what we find actually that this didn't really happen, right? So Golden Dawn itself had quite a large, had about 10% of its overall statements devoted to immigration in 2012. That went down to about 5% in 2015. And then you see for all the other parties, it's similar, not a very salient issue, right? As I said before, because we are looking at them at the period of economic crisis. But even before, we find that Syriza in 2009 had more attention in the election, in their manifesto, had more attention to immigration than it had in 12 and 15, which you wouldn't, of course, expect it from Syriza. But also it was a positive position on immigration. Then, as Daphne said, apart from just seeing whether by the entry of Golden Dawn we have attention on those issues that are very salient, as we would expect on the far-right parties, this wasn't confirmed, our hypothesis. We looked as to whether what actually was happening is whether the framing, how political parties frame issues, has actually changed in the period we're looking at. And so we wanted to see as to whether the way Golden Dawn talks about energy is actually under this nationalist framing. And actually this is what we found, that on issues, of course, you would expect that they're more likely to be linked with a nationalist rhetoric like defense. Of course, we find the majority of mentions on defense, like 50% of mentions about defense in Golden Dawn manifesto in 2015, are under this nationalism frame. That's nothing. We weren't surprised by that. Well, what we were surprised is that we actually find this nationalist framing across almost all issues, right? And in some issues that you wouldn't expect, like energy, so the rhetoric was very much about the country being self-reliant on energy, about this emphasis that we have to do something to take advantage of our own resources and stop being reliant on energy from other countries, right? So even in a case of energy where you wouldn't expect there will be such some frame, we actually find that actually that's not the case. There is a lot of nationalist framing. Unfortunately, that doesn't show very well. So it's better in the paper. So just here, I wanted you to see here that in the area of economics, where obviously was the most salient issue for all the political parties in recently, since 2012. Even in that case, not only in the rhetoric of the Golden Dawn, but also how the other parties talk about the economy has fallen into this nationalist framework. Of course, Laos here, so this axis here would be out of all the sentences devoted on the economy, what would be the percentage that falls within this nationalist framing? Here, Laos would be almost, I would say, 95% of all the sentences of Laos in 2009, though mentioning the economy, it had this nationalist framing. And most interesting down here with the Golden Dawn, you would see Golden Dawn down there obviously has the most nationalistic framing on the economy, but that's not only the case. KKE also has here a nationalist framing on the economy, right? Which you wouldn't perhaps necessarily expect that, or the other parties, PASOK, Laos, and so on. And we also said that we had two hypotheses, one looking at the ethnic nationalism and the other one on the civic nationalism, and we were expecting that actually not only overall nationalist framing would increase, but we were thinking that left parties are more likely to emphasize the civic nationalism and right-wing parties more likely to emphasize this nationalist, ethnic nationalist framework. And we do find that actually in the case of Golden Dawn and Laos and Anel as well, actually, that they emphasize both. So they both ethnic and civic nationalism are quite high. But in the case of KKE, we will see that actually the emphasis is very much on civic nationalism, and all the rhetoric is about mostly about economic nationalism. So contrary to what we expected to find from the literature, which is this issue ownership idea, rather far-right parties care a lot about immigration, about the French law and order, and this is what they attract attention to, this is what they try to mobilize in terms of the emphasis they place on the agenda. We actually don't find that this was the most salient issue in Golden Dawn's manifesto. But what we do find is that they've engaged in the positions of the other parties with regards to economics in the debate, and what was, of course, the most salient for the Greek people at the time. And of course, this opposition strategy to blame a lot the government and the mainstream parties for the situation we were in. But what we found is that actually the framing, although Golden Dawn engaged with the same type of issues as other political parties, the framing has been nationalistic. So in some cases, almost 50% of the framing had this nationalist framing. And that is not only Golden Dawn that has adopted this framing, so this rhetoric, highly nationalistic, but also the other political parties. And of course, they would vary depending on emphasizing more the ethnic or the civic type of nationalism. That varies, of course, across the issue dimensions and the type of party. So we said KKE, for example, we do find strong evidence, emphasize a lot the economic nationalism. But the far-right parties, more both of them, were prevalent. So the problem, the elephant in the room is we have this entry of Golden Dawn, kind of the rise of Golden Dawn during this period, but at the same time we have this massive economic crisis taking place in Greece. How is it to disentangle the two? It's impossible to disentangle the two, almost. One idea we have is perhaps look at the difference between the entry of Laos in the system and the entry of Golden Dawn, because obviously when Laos came in, there was no crisis at the time. However, of course, they're not the same parties, and Laos even took part in governments during the Memorandum 1. And what we found that actually, what we find that is most interesting is that although we have this number of issues that could attract the attention of political parties, and of course, so they could talk about a lot about the economy, it's actually the lens under which they talk about the economy is more this nationalistic lens, which could hint that there's perhaps an emerging new dimension of competition alongside kind of nationalism, based on nationalism. That's what we're capturing with our data. We hope to do more coding. We ran out of money. That's why we stopped there, because initially our proposal was we wanted to do media analysis and this and that. Obviously, you know, it's quite a big undertaking, so we ran out of money. So this is what we managed to do with the very generous funds the Hellenic Observatory and the Bank of Greece gave us. But we hope to do more, and we feel there's potential for this. There's so many things you could study with this project, and as we also hoping to look at the link between public opinion and the emphasis parties place on the most important issue, and so on. Yeah, that's it. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you both very much. I'm sure there are plenty of questions, but while people are gathering their thoughts, I'm going to ask you a couple quick ones.
Sure. Okay.
You talk about economic nationalism, and I just wonder there if you really mean economic nationalism or if you mean economic sovereignty. So that's my first question.
Okay.
If you could be a bit more, if you could specify a bit more what you mean by economic nationalism there. And related to that, I mean, I understand, of course, that you're distinguishing Golden Dawn as a specifically fascist and neo-Nazi movement as opposed to right-wing populist,
mm-hmm.
right? But again, related to the issue of sovereignty, you know, you of course, the coding and the questions that you're asking depend on your assessment of what their rhetoric already as nationalist. In other words, you're already framing it in that way. And again, if you look at a lot of, I mean, although you are saying that they are not simply right-wing populists, that they're more than that, but if you look at so many of the right-wing populist movements that are now gaining ground throughout Europe and elsewhere, one could argue that those are not really nationalist movements, but are more sovereignty movements, in other words, taking back one's country, right? Whatever that may mean, yeah. And in that regard, also, I would want to know, you know, you're talking about issue salience, a kind of contagion of Golden Dawn, right? Rhetoric, you could say, in other words, that they can determine a particular agenda, but is that not a wider is that not also influenced by other wider forces going on within the EU and globally and in the rhetoric that's circulating at the moment? Okay, so let's open it up for a couple more questions if you don't mind. Or do you want to answer those now? We have a bunch of hands.
That would be easier if you don't mind, because
okay,
then I think we're going
right.
to get too many questions
okay.
and we're going to lose our train.
Okay.
Should I have a go at the theory?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think the key to your question is to distinguish between sovereignty and nationalism. So I'll give you a rationale for how we've defined and operationalized nationalism. Now, we've used the very classic sort of Bruley or Anthony Smith definition that understands nationalism as the attainment and maintenance of the autonomy, identity, and unity of the nation. As a result of that, sovereignty is a part of nationalism, but not the whole picture, because there is very much an identity issue there. And not only the attainment of, basically not only the Gilnerian view of having the borders of the nation equal the borders of the state, which could be a sovereignty thing, but also the maintenance of that in the aspect of the reproduction of particular patterns of national identity. So how we differ, or rather how sovereignty fits in our definition, of course, because these parties want, you know, the borders of the nation to be congruent with the borders of the state. But it's more than that. It's about identity. and it's about putting an identity justification to every other policy. Foreigners cannot be part of our nation because they are not like us, and therefore they can't access our collective goods. They put a strain on an economy, economic nationalism. We are proud of our nation because of its currency, economic nationalism. We belong to particular common institutions that are defined, you know, by our currency, by the history of our pound, or, you know, this is economic nationalism. So it's not only about sovereignty, it's part of a very broad picture on that. Do you want to have a go at
all right, yeah. So about the fact that there's this rhetoric circulating at the moment, and this could be part of the broader debate. This is what I said about the economic crisis actually taking place at the same time as the entry of Golden Dawn. So there's definitely some endogeneity there taking place. But that doesn't mean that what we observe kind of doesn't happen, right? And the fact that it might be a broader kind of rhetoric, not only in Greece but elsewhere, like in the US or here in Britain, I think that perhaps plays more value to our research, that we're trying to see how parties talk about these issues, right? And and this emphasis on sovereignty and taking back control. Someone could say that actually taking back control, so you have it back into the nation, right? So, you know, I mean, it's not so clear the sovereignty so separate from kind of nationalist ideas.
Okay, so we have several hands. If you would also say who you are, please. So we'll have one and then two.
Hi, my name is Agnes Agnew. I'm a PhD student here in the European Institute. So I want to tap on the previous comment you made about the wider forces that actually may kind of confound your results. For example, going back to the concept of nationalism in macroeconomics, I would say, you know, an alternative independent variable would be to see the economic programs and how they evolved over the crisis, and see more especially what is their intrusiveness regarding national economic policies. That may actually, you know, explain why Greek political parties from around the spectrum react in that sense. You know, they're essentially reacting to having more intrusive conditions. Mm. But that can be controlled, I guess, right? Because you do have indices that assess the intrusiveness of structural and macroeconomic conditionality, and those indices actually suggest that, you know, conditionality increased as the crisis evolved. But, you know, I think that's something you can control for, and maybe, you know, put even more leverage in your arguments. So that's maybe also a suggestion for the future.
Yeah, very good. Thank you.
Okay.
Talia Magioglu, visiting fellow at the Hellenic Observatory. Thank you. And actually, I was telling you before that I've been interviewing young adults in Greece for several years. And in this sample, there were some Golden Dawn supporters. So, well, I have had one person in 2011, particularly that I can think of, who didn't exactly at the time tell me that he was voting for Golden Dawn, but he was for violence against unions, anti-corruption, also in some sort of religious group. Well, the other person, more recently, who's a 19-year-old girl, and the difference in the time is that I interviewed her in February 2016, and she very openly admitted that she was voting for Golden Dawn, whereas I didn't contact her with that label exactly. I was like, I'm looking for young people of this age. And she told me, I vote against democracy. So that was right away when I told her, tell me, democracy that comes to your mind. And the other thing that I think there was a difference with the person in 2011 is that she mentioned immigration, whereas the other person was more, there's a corrupt system and we have to do something with the violence. And, in 2016, it was, there's sort of erosion of our social network. My neighborhood is not what it used to be. And at the same time, there was a sort of break in the family because there's a separation of mother and father. And also, I found very interesting to see, not only in her case, but in also other cases, that in the same family, an extended family, you have people voting for very opposing parties. Mm. So the mother is a communist, the father is Golden Dawn, the daughter is Golden Dawn, her boyfriend is Syriza, and...
and they all get along beautifully.
Yeah. Other people who were, for example, pro-Syriza or pro-other parties, they were mentioning a member of their family. So these people actually coexist in the same, and they talk together. fighting, of course, but at the same time, economically speaking, they live in harmony because families, as we know, especially in Greece, sort of are solidary, financially speaking. So that's
okay. Let me take one more and then respond to that. There was a hand back here. Yes, yes, yeah.
Me?
Yes, you.
Just first of all, I want to make a correction. You mentioned that the Labour Party in the UK is also influenced by Nigel Farage. They have a lot of now, they are against immigration. But I was here under Tony Blair. They always had the Eurosceptic MPs. They will never open to immigration anyway. So this cannot be right. And the data you've taken, have you taken the data from the website? Because the website, I'm looking at the website, I can't get it now on the mobile phone. They are actually nationalists. They are an immigration party. But they don't seem to say that they're going to abolish democracy.
Who's that, the Golden Dawn?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. If you want to respond to those three, and then let's questions.
Yeah, on the conditionality, I think it's an excellent point. We will look more into this interaction of the crisis and kind of the entry of the Golden Dawn, trying to disentangle it. And so it's a great point. We'll definitely take this on board. On the supporters, on the Golden Dawn supporters, I think it's super interesting what kind of from your interviews, what comes out. But somehow in our data, there's no much emphasis on immigration. So the supporter in 2016 was so against immigrants. And we know that actually what Golden Dawn stands for, it is against immigration, right? That's their position. But somehow they didn't emphasize this in their manifestos, right? In the documents we quoted. So that's what we found interesting, because we were expecting to find, they tried to appeal to their voters by emphasizing their issues, because that's but actually they engage on the same issues as the other political parties, which is the economy and government and so on. Do you want to
I'll have a go at yours. So there is in fact quite a lot of literature that argues that for example the Labour Party has been taking a much stricter stance on immigration, say, since 2010. So there has been generally a movement. Euroscepticism in the UK is, we're not doing the UK here, but Euroscepticism in the UK is a very different kettle of fish than it is. British people are more Eurosceptic generally, and that is reflected in the particular party composition. However, it's very interesting that these ideas are now, look at the way competition is driven now is by this in the UK. So essentially it's not, so Nigel Farage drives the Tories and the Tories drive the rest, if that makes any sense. So essentially they've all moved, they express it far more easily. They express it far more clearly, and it's not even a question now. The Labour Party will have to compete. That the problem is that party competition, it's going to be played, the game is going to be played in this court now, and that is the issue. So anybody at the moment who wants to win votes cannot blatantly come out and say, we really support immigration. These are the experts that are post-truth. But we're not talking about Britain, so I'm just going to move on very quickly to your other point about the Golden Dawn. The Golden Dawn does in fact say that it wants to abolish democracy. In its so on another study that I did on our book that we did with Sophia, we studied 1,000 and over of their online materials. They have at times said these hands are clean, I even remember the quote, and we are going to, this democracy is nothing but the fake democracy of these internal collaborators and these external vile enemies of the nation that seeks to annihilate us and what we stand for, and we are going to abolish all of them. And it's in fact so similar to a fascist principle, because they say that the fascist leader is understood, even in the manifestos, as not the representative, but the embodiment of the Greek people, who are going to abolish all that. So I'd say that, in fact, the Golden Dawn is very open about its rejection.
They didn't say on the website, though. They don't say something like that.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They do?
I'll show you.
Okay, we have a few more questions. Yes, Constantine, and then we'll go this way. And then,
yeah. My name is Constantine Mukhaiga. I do write for Broadcast in Greece. Just small parenthesis, Green Party, Plaid Cymru, SNP, do say immigrants welcome.
Okay,
that's
sure.
Which brings to the environment, which I was surprised to see that it was rock bottom in Golden Dawn, because with the Nazis, the environment, the purification of the nation, that was right at the spot. So why is the environment so rock bottom if they are indeed neo-Nazis and inspired by the Nazis?
My question relates to a point raised initially in your talk that has to do with party competition. In 2013, the whole Golden Dawn party was prosecuted.
Yeah.
Which has never happened before in Greek history. And upon its prosecution, the Greek parliament passed a law that basically froze any state funding for the party. The Golden Dawn challenged this law before the Council of State, and the Council of State ruled that this was perfectly constitutional. I cannot tell you what criticism this particular decision has raised. But in my mind, and taking into account that Golden Dawn has been excluded, and I'm not playing Golden Dawn supporter here, I'm just playing the devil's advocate. Golden Dawn has been excluded by all mainstream media. It has its funding has been suspended. I'm wondering what kind of healthy party competition exists in Greece, and whether this element should be taken into account in your research. I know this is not the prime subject of this talk, but it sort of touches upon your issue.
Okay. Katharina, take one more if you don't mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Katharina. I'm a PhD student at the Observatory and the Human Institute. You mentioned using certain critical junctures as a point where you would collect data, and that makes sense. I was wondering, and you also said that at some point that you're applying to finish. So I don't know if you have considered, or if you would like to consider critical points like when the picture of Aylan was found at the Turkish shores, when the public opinion on refugees changed. And somehow, because I was in Greece in 2012, where it seemed like every day a migrant was being murdered by Golden Dawn supporters at the Ionian Square. And then again, 2015-16, where there were thousands of refugees coming again and again, but everything was quiet. You wouldn't hear violent acts as much.
Mm.
And it seems like they would have more of a reason to be violent and to have to express their opinions in parliament about immigration. So I don't know if you have considered studying that, or if you have any comments.
Okay.
Yeah. You want to respond to those?
Right, yeah. Should I say about the party competition?
Go for it.
All right. So the type of party competition we have is, because you said about what happened in 2013, right? You see, in 2014, Golden Dawn got 9.39% of the vote, and in 2015 got 17 seats, right? So despite what happened, the type of party competition we have is people still vote for the party, right? So this way,
yeah. Don't forget, I don't know what the 2015 election were actually democratic. Members of the Golden Dawn were in prison.
Yeah, and they still got 17 seats, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a democracy, sort of, you know, locking somebody in. sort of can keep them down, or I mean, I'm not.
Well, if they commit crimes, this would be your thing.
Well, okay. So we have another question.
Can I make a clarification? This is a very, very tricky issue, isn't it? The Golden Dawn, and so I just want to make a disclaimer, if you like, that we're not doing normative politics here, and our research, our project, is not in any way normative. So we don't take a stance. I mean, no, I'm not a Golden Dawn supporter, by fact. But however, this is not what this is about. So we're not taking a stance on whether something should happen or not. We're not taking a stance on, you know, is it good what is happening? Should they be persecuted? Should they belong to the system? How should they be? None of that. We're doing a political science analysis of trying to understand to what extent the entry of the Golden Dawn in the system has influenced other parties. Where we all belong in our political beliefs, we can chat in the pub after, and I'd be happy to. But to very quickly to answer your question, I think the parties that you mentioned, and again we're going to Britain, fit beautifully the party competition framework, because the SNP, of course, is not going to compete along those ways, because in the Scotland the dynamics are different. In fact, nationalism functions in a very different way. Okay, and even the Lib Dems, right, party competition, they now want to separate themselves because they're not going to win otherwise. They can't tag along the other parties. Their only solution is to compete. And on the environment, the true answer is I don't know why the Golden Dawn doesn't mention the environment. In our analysis of the Golden Dawn as fascist, we've looked at Michael Mann's theory, so we've applied the nationalism, statism, paramilitarism, transcendence, and cleansing framework as an overarching definition of what a fascist neo-Nazi party is. And the Golden Dawn, you know, its manifesto and materials mentions all of these, so they fit into this classification. Now, more specific things about the environment are, you know, are a puzzle to us. I don't know why they don't mention it.
But also, I think other Greek parties that that engage in
what was it about immigration?
No? Mm.
About immigration, sorry, it was different.
So here, other Greek parties actually emphasize immigration and minority rights. Of course, they're not all arguing restrictive immigration policies, right? So actually, you see that Syriza in 2009, of course, it will have a positive stance with regards to on the immigration question. But unfortunately, our coding scheme doesn't capture positions, it captures how much attention they draw to this issue, right? So the same, of course, could be said for Potami in 2015, right? So you could see about 10% of the manifesto of Potami in 2015 was devoted on minority rights and immigration. That doesn't mean that Potami has a restrictive immigration policy, right? So, because obviously it's more on the left. But that's what captures is that they do engage on the same issues, but it might be that they have a different positions on that. Similar to what happens in the UK.
I don't know if you want to address the other question about
the critical junctures. Yeah. So the idea was because we used critical junctures relating to the crisis, the economic crisis. So you're saying that's why we haven't found salience in immigration, right? So fair enough. So if we looked at critical junctures linked to immigration, the violence in Goldberg, the violent acts and so on, so we might find, of course, more emphasis on immigration. That's a really kind of very good point. As I said before, we're hoping to have a much broader time period of own speeches, and we wanted to look at the refugee crisis, if I want to be honest. But as I said before, we kind of ran out of money on that side. So there's more to come, and definitely on the refugee crisis, we're very much interested to see what's happening on that, yeah.
Why don't we take one more round of questions? We have one here, and then back there, and then here.
So I have a quick question, and perhaps a suggestion along the lines that Angelos mentioned at the beginning. So my question is just: how exactly do you measure nationalist framing, and what does that exactly mean? I'm just genuinely interested. And the suggestion perhaps would be, it also has to do with the elephant in the room and the confounding factors. I mean, perhaps one thing you could do is look at constituencies that have been struck by the crisis in similar ways, so have similar levels of unemployment, but have much different levels of voting for the Golden Dawn, and then to see if in those constituencies you observe much more talk about immigration of the package you expect.
Whether they vote for the right or the left, historically, even with the regions.
Within the regions.
Yeah, but maybe yeah, if you zoom into the country and you look at different electoral constituencies,
mm-hmm.
maybe then you can, you know,
find variations.
Difference, yeah, in mm-hmm. areas where the Golden Dawn tends to be more dominant. I mean, of course, then there might be also unobserved variables, etc.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Mm.
There's a question up there.
Stella, Clara de Fumé and Pantin.
Hi.
I know you already have the question from other people, but I want to ask it a bit differently. So if you're trying to see how the Golden Dawn maybe contaminates the discourse of other parties, I know it's not a very politically correct
mm-hmm.
word, it's, you need to actually, how do you distinguish that from whether the discourse in general has been contaminated by what's happening globally. So maybe the question that you're answering is more specific is how discourse in this has been changing towards specific issues, and you're looking at different parties. But I don't know how you can actually show that it's the Golden Dawn and it's not
yeah.
a global trend towards nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
You were asked this question, but yeah, a bit more maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just actually going back to Anna's question about kind of the weird place that Golden Dawn has in party competition. I think it should not. I don't think it should be underestimated the fact that they really function in a completely different framework than all other Greek political parties. I mean, it is true that. Mainstream TV stations don't really broadcast their positions. They don't broadcast even their leaders' speeches in parliament. I'm not judging whether this is good or wrong. Probably, I would personally say it's good. But I mean, the point is that I don't know to what extent we can associate their capacity to contaminate public discourse when they are compartmentalized so much by, and probably it's also. Is endogenous to them as well, because it's different if I decide to make a speech, even if a statement on my website, and I know that I function in an area where it won't go way beyond the people who read my website, for example, that kind of structures also what I will say, right? And that also leads me also to the question of junctures. I think it's interesting, obviously, that you want to have it comparative across all parties. But I would imagine that no juncture has been more significant for Golden Dawn itself than the fact that they were arrested. So, for example, when it comes to questions of government or questions of the legitimacy of the political system, I would expect that to have some kind of an impact on what they say. So, when it comes to the longitudinal dimension of your data, I wonder whether you found any kind of variation in terms of the before and after their arrest, which was in October 2013, if I remember. And a second related question, because I'm quite interested in it. Traditionally in Greece, we position ourselves along a left-right axis, which in a Greek context means something very, very specific. The center has traditionally been also a political identity in Greece. I wonder if this is completely probably peripheral to what you're looking at. In terms of their discourse, how is the right, the word dexia, how we say Greek, is that used in any way for Golden Dawn to position itself against, or is this just kind of a question?
Okay.
I
do you mind if we take one more before you answer, or would you prefer to answer them?
I might too.
No, do you? No,
we
do.
Yeah.
Shall we take one more?
Okay, let's take one more.
Okay.
Just on the party competition side, I think we are focusing much too much on the formal side of party competition, and we know that it doesn't matter if you have a voice in formal media, but you can use social media, whatever other platforms to protect your message, and in that sense, you can create your own echo chambers, and you can reproduce your own values and what have you, and people can go to those websites and find out information about your party and whatever. So I don't think that matters anymore in our age and time. and we've seen that with the election of Donald Trump. Now, my comment has to do with the demand side of populism, and I think that's a neat focus for your paper, in the sense of, okay, you say that there is some sort of salience and there is some sort of effect that we can correlate somehow, but this really needs to go hand in hand with the demand side. So is there a proper demand for these kinds of policies? Is this a reflection of the public's demand for, say, more national sovereignty, more national control, more return to the roots, things like that? So how do you connect this change in issue salience with exactly the demand side for nationalism?
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Okay.
You know, I'm an expert on nationalism. So.
All right.
Do you want me to try? Or?
Tackle those.
Yeah. Okay. I'll start with your question. In a way, I agree with Fanny's. I think, you know, one thing we found out, again, in a separate project that we did with Sophia, is what a fantastically elaborate website the Golden Dawn has. Mm-hmm. You will be amazed. And I do urge you, where you to look at it. In fact, you can buy loads of things from it. You can buy little mats to put your mug on, and you can buy a keyring and jewellery. You can buy earrings from them. And they have an English section, so don't you worry if you don't speak Greek, because you can also find the English version. And you can order things online, and they have loads of outlets. So they publish different bulletins that are very widely available. There are very different, you know, internet connecting sites. So actually, the rhetoric is far more accessible than you'd think, even if the media may not necessarily make these available. So I'd say it's tricky, the access. And obviously on social media, they have so much. If you look at comments and things that they publish, they have so much support. Now, your question about left-right, which again comes from another project, so I think, but you know what's interesting, and this is takes me back to the definition of fascism. You know, no, the Golden Dawn nicely differentiates itself also from the right-wing and from right-wing authoritarian types of parties that we had in the past. And this is where it presents. It says in its manifesto, the second thing it says is, we espouse the third biggest ideology in history, nationalism and socialism, nationalist socialism. So yes, they're not Nazi in that they don't want German National Socialism, but they are Greek Nazis because they want, and in this way they do not associate themselves with the right. It's a very, very interesting way they place their ideology. On your, I can't remember who it was, who asked me about how we operationalized nationalism, how we measured it?
Nationalist framework,
yes. Nationalist framework. So we did this, we actually used, so Kyriaki, Sophie and I published a paper in 2012 called The Paradox of Nationalism. In which we tried to show that far left and far right Euroscepticism are both nationalistic. And we operationalized nationalism using sort of the Anthony Smith's framework of ethnic, for four dimensions, ethnic, cultural, territorial, and economic. And we operationalize each one. We basically look for, so for ethnic, we look for any mention to ascriptive criteria. For cultural, we look at any mention to criteria that is difficult to change but not immutable. For economic, we look at all this, you know, justification against welfare, pride in our currency, etc. And for territorial, we look at sort of, you know, protectionist policies for the territory, sort of irredentism and, you know, a strong emphasis on defense, etc. But if you want more information on that, we have a written version for you.
Do you want to add anything? Or?
Yeah. No, I'm all right. Should I go for another?
Shall we have another question?
No, I mean, we have an answer, though.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Was Taylor's question, right?
Oh.
So it links very nicely with yours. So you're right, we could be just studying one aspect of this global trend of rise in nationalism, right? And it is not only the Golden Dawn, but it's actually what we find across the board in the Greek party system. We have this rise of this nationalist framing. So to make sure it actually is part of the global trend, we have to obviously link it with other studies, see is it the same in Spain, or I suppose, I don't know, do more of a comparative study. I don't know how easy would that be, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is there
another way? I don't know how else we can control that, right?
Maybe a bit more in depth on how the Golden Dawn interacts with other parties, apart from them.
So you mean like perhaps see how they behave as an opposition or
we're
open to it because it would be nice to find a way to disentangle it, right?
It's a bit like a map, what you're offering.
Yes. We need some next step, yeah.
Can go a little bit further, I'm sure it can.
Yes.
Because I think your argument probably is right.
Yeah, and I mean, and the good thing with this type of kind of coding we have is we can always go back to the original document, right? So you could all see what we've coded as nationalist, economic, ethnic, you know, does it make sense? You could also change your own coding and so this kind of. So that's quite transparent and also usable for other people in the project. So on the critical juncture, Aguilo said about when they were arrested, right? Again, that would be very interesting to see the discourse, especially on government and the legitimacy of the political system. As I said, limited funds, we had to kind of prioritize. Yeah, but for the future, we hope to do much more than that. Yeah. And on the demand side of populism, Fanny said, definitely we need to link it with voters, with public opinion data, and see if there is questions we could infer if there's more nationalist demand, that would be more interesting, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
And of course, the timing as well, right? So it's before and after. So is it responsiveness to the demand? So are these all parties respond to everyone in Greece? Kind of became a bit more with the flag and this kind of.
Yeah, I mean, if I can just add, I think just two things it's so difficult. There are two things that you raised, Stella and Fanny, that are the two issues, right? So the one is, does demand drive supply, or is it the other way around? And your question is, the causality of it all, and really there's endogeneity in both.
Yeah.
And I think, we are limited by definition in what we can prove in a single case study. How can we really show? So, sure, I think maybe looking at more data, looking at public opinion data, looking at different critical junctures could help, but there will be an endogeneity there, really, no matter what we do.
Yeah, perhaps one way out of it still is to look at the comparison with Laos, perhaps.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before the crisis and see, the comparison of those two in a way, and also the effect they might have. But because we have much more variation of the agendas before the crisis, so they emphasize completely different issues, the parties, before the crisis, whereas after the crisis we have this focus on everything that has to do with the economy, I suppose. So.
Well, we have one very insistent question in her ear, so we should let him have one more question.
I wonder whether there's any connection between the variation of salience regarding the trade and politics and the position of a party in the political spectrum. So, for example, was the incumbent government more prone to change their rhetoric towards this kind of nationalist framework, or maybe the right-wing parts were more willing to change their rhetoric towards the far right framework? Have you seen any kind of connection like this?
Well, what we found is that actually the government opposition dynamics are kind of clear. We find that all these the opposition parties tend to be more emphasized, more kind of nationalist framing in than the government parties. And we saw it a lot with Syriza, like in 2009 in opposition, and after how they've actually it's gone down how much emphasis they put the nationalist element of it, which we thought in the referendum especially, because there was they made that such a big deal about saying no, and we thought we will find a lot of emphasis on this nationalist framing, but we don't find that actually. It has gone down over time, which is very kind of perhaps it is as a result of them being government, and they have to juggle the kind of external rhetoric, discourse and internal and so on. So we do find that there's a change with Syriza definitely before and after the being government. Yeah.
Well, thank you both very much for a stimulating talk. Before everyone. gets up, let me just announce that the next seminar is going to be 3 weeks from today on the 21st, and it will be Effie Focus and Margherita Markoviti, both from Eliamap, talking about religious pluralism and education in Greece. Same time, same place on the 21st.
Thank you
both.
Thank you.